Welcome to our program, everybody. This is English Digest, and I'm Tom.
Hi, I'm Stephanie.
And today is our second day talking about the novel My Sister's Keeper, and we could also be using this as a way to talk about the film, too. The film version has come out, starring Cameron Diaz and Alec Baldwin, but you might also enjoy reading the book as well.
That's right. You know, it's fun to compare books and movies. You usually get more of the story if you read the book. And if you read the book first and then go to the movie, sometimes you can feel a little disappointed. But forgive them, they only have 2 hours to tell a story on screen. So they got to cut some stuff out. Well, let's go back and review what this book is about. It's about a family that has a really difficult ordeal to go through. You see, their daughter, Kate, has leukemia, cancer of the blood, and the only way to really save her is to find someone who has the same blood type and bone marrow, and that's sometimes very difficult to find. So what they choose to do is create a designer baby, and then Anna, a little sister, is born. You see, she's a perfect genetic match, means her genes are the same as Kate's, and she can then help Kate, in essence, save Kate's life is what she's going to do.
Mm-hmm. But she has to ask this question, is her existence in relation totally to her sister Kate? Mm-hmm. Does she have her own life? Can she go see those hockey games that she enjoys so much? But instead, she has to be a slave to her sister and head to the hospital and have those painful treatments. Where we left off, it turned out that Kate needed a kidney transplant, and of course the likely candidate was her sister Anna. Anna was fed up. She was not going to take that anymore, so she hired a really fancy lawyer, a really smart lawyer, a know-it-all lawyer to help her out, and she decided to sue her parents. No, I'm not going to give you my kidney. And she wants to have her own destiny in her own hands. Well, everybody, we're going to continue with this story and talk a little bit about the narration here. Let's read through the content of today's lesson, and then we'll come back to discuss it. Pickle's narration switches between characters, a method that enables the reader to grasp the different perspectives of those affected by Kate's cancer. Anna is compassionate as she explains her dilemma. She understands the tragic implications of no longer helping her sister to live, but badly wants the right to her own body and her own life. Like Anna, the eldest child, Jesse, feels invisible, and he acts out his deep frustrations by becoming rebellious. Sarah is a mother precariously close to the edge. Her constant pleas for Anna to drop the case fall on deaf ears, and the distance between the two widens until Anna moves out of the family home. Sarah is running out of answers, as Kate is running out of time. When Anna's parents learn that she is suing them, the family falls apart. Sarah, a lawyer-turned-housewife, can only think of Kate's survival and decides to stand against Anna in court. Brian, a firefighter, knows what it is like to save a life and how it feels when there is no more one can do. He is sympathetic to Anna's point of view and struggles desperately to keep his family together. In the meantime, Jesse's unruly behavior reaches new heights. Unable to be Kate's savior, he develops a dangerous obsession with fire, and arson becomes his crime of choice as he retaliates against his circumstances. As the dramatic trial draws to an end, the tale reaches a climax that would surely melt the coldest of hearts. The judge rules in favor of Anna, but in a bittersweet twist of fate, the outcome is far from what anyone in the courtroom could ever have predicted.
Now, when you tell a story, you often have narration. So you're guiding the reader through the story, and you can choose to tell the story from different characters' perspectives. You might want to tell the story from Anna's perspective. You know, tell the story how she sees things, or maybe tell the story from Kate's perspective, or the mom or dad. Well, Picoult, the author here, decides to switch between characters when she's telling the story, which I think is really fair. You get to see the story from everyone's point of view.
Sure. So notice here we have the phrase to switch between something. We're changing the point of view or changing the perspective. And again, this gives us all reasons to feel compassionate about different characters' points of view. Well, Anna is compassionate as she explains her dilemma. If you're compassionate, you have feelings for something or someone, not just about yourself. You are concerned about the health and welfare of other people. So she is compassionate. She is very emotional as she explains her dilemma. A dilemma is a situation that you can't really resolve. You don't really know what to do. If you do A, then B suffers. And if you do B, then A suffers. What are you gonna do?
We often talk about the subtle difference between the word compassionate and sympathetic. If someone's compassionate, they actually try to place themselves in that other person's shoes, or maybe they've even gone through the same thing. So they really have a better understanding of what that person's feeling, and they have far more sympathy and emotion for that person. If you're sympathetic, you just kind of feel sorry for someone. Doesn't mean you actually understand what they're trying to go through. So Anna is compassionate. She loves her sister, but at some point she kind of puts her foot down and wants to say, hey, but this is my life too. I'm here for me as well as other people.
Absolutely. So she does understand the tragic implications if she were to no longer help her sister to live. Implication means something that's going to happen if you do something, the result of something. And, well, she's not dumb, you know. She knows that if she doesn't help her sister is going to be in big trouble. So she understands that and she feels bad about that. But at the same time, she wants the right to her own body and her own life. And she does have to respect herself at some point. She isn't just the slave to her sick sister.
Well, they've got another child in this family. We haven't really mentioned him until now. He's the oldest or the eldest child in the family. His name is Jesse, and he feels invisible, which you might if you have two other siblings who are kind of taking up all the attention. All the attention in the family's going to them. He feels invisible, like no one can see him. Invisible just means you can't see something. But if you use it in this situation, it means you don't feel like people are paying attention to you. You don't feel like you're important. You're not being noticed. And that's what he feels. And so he starts to act out his frustrations. Now, this often happens with kids when they can't communicate how they really feel. And he's probably a teenager. Then they start doing things that are damaging. They misbehave, or they steal things, or they start to cause trouble because it's the only way they can get their parents to notice them.
Mm-hmm. So he acts out those frustrations by becoming rebellious. And rebellious here just means you do things that you're not supposed to be doing just because you think you can, just to make other people angry at you. So he's being rebellious here. Of course, young children become rebellious at various stages in their lives to test authority, to see how far their parents or their teachers will go. So he becomes rebellious here. We also have Sarah. Okay, we haven't really talked about the parents yet. Sarah is the mother of Kate and Anna and Jesse, and she is precariously close to the edge. Precarious here means just in a very dangerous situation, and if you're close to the edge, well, you could be standing on a cliff on the East Coast here in Taiwan, and if you're not careful, you might fall off. But usually we refer to this when we're talking about someone who's about to lose their mind. Things are just so difficult for them. Other people just don't understand them, and they're just about to go crazy. She's so close to the edge, she could crack at any second.
Oh, she could. She's under a lot of stress here, this poor mom. Now, her constant pleas for Anna just to drop the lawsuit fall on deaf ears. Now, when you plea, this can be used as a verb or a noun. Here it's a noun. A plea is just a really urgent request. It's usually full of emotion. Please don't sue us. Please stop this nonsense. Let's work this out at home. Well, those are her pleas to her daughter, Anna. But those pleas fall on deaf ears, which is a phrase that means, no one's listening to you. You might as well stop. If you're deaf, you can't hear. So that phrase makes sense. To fall on deaf ears simply means, they're ignoring you. They're not really paying any attention. You might as well quit trying.
Stephanie, did you just say something?
No, I think whatever I'm saying is falling on deaf ears.
Mm-hmm. That seems to happen quite frequently, doesn't it? But in any case, yes, she's not intending at all to drop the lawsuit. So their pleas all fall on deaf ears.
No.
She's just not going to listen to what they have to say. So, of course, as you might expect, distance starts to widen between all of the people. And then Anna finally moves out of the family home. She's had enough. She moves out and moves somewhere else. Well, Sarah is at the end of her rope. She's running out of answers as Kate is running out of time. So Kate is going to be dead pretty soon. And Sarah, of course, is the mother. She does not want to see that happen. So she's in a very desperate situation.
She sure is. Well, everybody, this is probably a good time to listen to our Chinese teacher, and then we'll take a break and be right back to continue.
Hi, everyone. My name is Jenny. 我们要看的这部作品《My Sister's Keeper》，我们继续看看故事怎么的发展。这一段里头，他提到了作者呢 ，Picot， 他的叙述手腕非常的特别，因为这本书每一个章节可能人称都是 I， 可是却是由不同的角色来讲。意思就是说，有时候可能是 Anna， 有时候可能是她的父母，有时候可能是 Kate， 是以第一人称在各个角色之间转换叙述的。那我们这个方法呢，当然可以让读者可以 grasp the different perspectives， 看到各种不同的角度，这些角色用他的角度来看这件事情究竟是如何。好，我们先从 Anna 开始。Anna 呢，叙述到她自己的困境的时候，她是充满着 compassion， 是充满着同情心的，所以 she is compassionate。而呢，她也了解到，如果说她不再帮她的姐姐的话，那结果当然是一场悲剧，姐姐肯定会过世。But badly wants the right to her own body and her own life。尽管如此，他还是极度的渴望他能够拥有对他自己的身体跟对他的人生的这种自主权。好，我们看到 right 这个字， right 代表权利。你说一个人他拥有对什么事情的权利，是 have the right to something， 这个 to 是介系词。好，我们再看下面呢，又继续说了，就像 Anna 一样， the eldest child Jessie feels invisible。这两个姐妹其实还有一位哥哥，而这个哥哥呢叫 Jessie， 他一直觉得自己好像没有被看见一样，好像是个隐形人一样。而且呢，他怎么样发泄呢？他将他的这种挫折感投注在于诉诸于什么？ Becoming rebellious， 他用叛逆的行为来反映表现出他心中的挫折。好，我们再看 Sarah， 也就是他的妈妈。这个妈妈呢，她是怎么样呢？Precariously close to the edge. Precariously 这个副词是表示一个人性格上的不稳定，他非常的不稳。Close to the edge 意思就是说他简直是快要崩溃了，整个精神状况可能已经在不稳定的情况了。他一直要求 Anna 能够撤回告诉，我们知道提出告诉是 file a lawsuit， 那撤回告诉呢，用一个动词 drop， drop the case。好，我们看到这个请求却被当作耳边风，他完全是充耳不闻 ，fall on deaf ears。Anna 却没有听进去，所以这两者，也就是母亲跟女儿 ，Sarah 跟 Anna 之间可以说渐行渐远。那我们看到了，其实 Sarah 最后当 Kate 已经 running out of time， 也就是时日不多的时候呢，她其实也不知道该怎么办才好，已经无计可施了。
We're going to take a very short break. Stay tuned, we'll be back with more My Sister's Keeper on English Digest.
Welcome back, everybody. Now, one reason you might find Jodi Picoult's novel, My Sister's Keeper, interesting is that she switches between the characters. So that gives you different perspectives from different characters. Well, Anna, of course, is not the devil here. She is compassionate about her sister's situation, but she's in a dilemma. On one hand, she feels she's a slave to her sister, helping her out with all these medical treatments, but at the same time, she thinks she deserves to have her own life. Well, finally, we talked about the older brother here. He's been invisible, and he feels invisible, and he starts acting crazy. He takes out his frustrations by becoming rebellious. Sarah, the mother, of course, is having a difficult time with this. She's close to the edge. She wants Anna to drop that lawsuit, but those pleas fall on deaf ears. Remember, Anna is filing a lawsuit so that she does not have to give a kidney to her sister. So my goodness, the family is falling apart and Kate is running out of time. Well, Anna's parents learn that she is suing them, of course, and as a result, as I just said, the family falls apart. If something falls apart, that means it's no longer whole, it's no longer together. You could say this about all sorts of things. A building starts to fall apart if you don't take care of it, and a family might fall apart if people are having certain problems that don't get resolved.
Now, Sarah, the mom, is actually a lawyer-turned-housewife. So before she had kids and got married, she practiced law. She was an attorney, a lawyer. And she can only think of Kate's survival. She just is so focused on making sure her little girl, Kate, lives. And that's why she decides to stand against or oppose Anna in court. It's not because she doesn't love Anna, but you don't want to see a child die, and that's how she's feeling right now. It's all she can really focus on. Now, what's the dad like, Tom?
Brian writes, yeah. He's a firefighter, which means he puts out fires. And he knows what it is like to save a life, so he's probably done this before. He's gone into burning buildings and carried people out. And, of course, he knows how it feels when there is no more one can do. So he probably has had the experience of running into a burning building, and he found out that, I just can't save you, you're going to have to die. So, of course, that must be a very terrible feeling to know that you just can't help someone. Doctors probably feel this way all the time, too, when they come across patients that they just can't do anything for. So as a result, he is sympathetic to Anna's point of view. And you mentioned this before, sympathetic, the difference between being compassionate and sympathetic. Again, sympathetic here means that you understand someone else's position, but you don't necessarily feel for them as much as you would if you were compassionate.
Yeah, he obviously has never been in Anna's shoes. He doesn't know what it feels like to have to completely devote and dedicate your life to someone else's health and survival. But he does feel sorry for Anna. He thinks it's really sad. And he understands her point of view or how she's seeing things. And what he tries to do as a dad is just desperately struggle to keep his family together. He doesn't want to see them torn apart. He doesn't want to see any of his kids leave the house. It sounds like Jesse's having a lot of problems. He could decide to just leave one day, as teenagers sometimes do. And Anna's trying to sue her own parents. So it's kind of a mess right now. And I think Brian's just focused on keeping his family together.
Okay, well, in the meantime, while all of this is going on, Jesse is having problems. He has this unruly behavior. Unruly just means rebellious. Same thing. It reaches new heights. He's getting really, really bad now. Unable to be Kate's savior, he develops a dangerous obsession with fire. So he feels frustrated here. Of course, he's the oldest son. Maybe he feels that he has a certain responsibility to his younger sister. But again, he feels very helpless. He can't do anything. So he fights this feeling by being obsessed with fire. Some people are obsessed with fire. And if you put things on fire or set things on fire on purpose in order to collect insurance money or for whatever reason, it's called arson. Okay, arson. And that becomes his crime of choice because he's retaliating against his circumstances. So he's doing this because he wants to retaliate. Retaliate just means to fight back.
Yeah, for example, maybe you were a student a long time ago in elementary school and someone hit you. Yeah. Well, you're not going to just stand there and take it, right? You want to retaliate, so you probably hit him back.
That's what you should do, right? An eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth.
Forgive them and walk away. But boys usually retaliate. I don't know about the girls. I was too afraid to hit back, I'm afraid.
Well, girls do hit, as you know. They're not the gentle little flowers that we believe that they are.
Some hit, some don't.
Some do,
yeah,
you bet. Some are nice, though. It's okay. And as the dramatic trial draws to an end, the tale reaches a climax, which is the high point of something. And it would surely melt the coldest of hearts. So if you have a heart made out of stone and you think you're not going to be moved emotionally by this movie, well, we challenge you to go see this movie and try to keep your eyes from getting all wet with tears.
Maybe even the guys will cry. Wouldn't that be fun?
It would.
Yeah, if I go with a guy and it's a sad movie, I try not to look at him at the sad part in case he's tearing up a little. It's embarrassing for him.
It can happen.
Well, the judge rules in favor of Anna. If a judge rules in your favor, it means that they decide to support your position. So you win that argument. You win the lawsuit. So I guess the judge really sort of sided with Anna, felt like she had some good arguments to support her lawsuit, and he understood what she was asking. I think anybody would. You know, I probably would support Anna too, I think.
Mm-hmm.
As much as I love kids and you don't want to see any child die, it's not fair to ask another child to be responsible for, you know, the life or death of a sibling.
Mm-hmm. So it's both a moral and an ethical question. And, of course, Anna does win the lawsuit. As you said, the judge ruled in favor of her. But the opposite of that is to rule against someone. But in a bittersweet twist of fate, the outcome is far from what anyone in the courtroom could ever have predicted. If you predict something, you make an educated guess about what is going to happen in the future. And of course, it would be a great sin, a great crime, if we told you the ending of this movie and of this novel. So you're going to have to either read the novel yourself or see the movie yourself in order to find out what happens at the end. We have this bittersweet twist of fate. A twist of fate means you have a result that you totally did not expect. And so this is going to have a surprise ending here, and it's bittersweet here.
Well, there's some good parts to it and some that are sad. So we just sort of put those two words together and make a new adjective. It's not all happy, and it's definitely not all sad. It's bittersweet. But I'll tell you the truth. When I see bittersweet, I often think it's really more sad than happy, don't you?
I certainly do, too.
Yeah.
So again, the outcome or result of this movie is something that you could never have predicted. Okay, everybody, you can discuss this amongst yourselves. But right now, we're going to listen to our Chinese teacher, and then we're going to say goodbye.
我们知道故事发展到此，这一家可以说已经是四分五裂了。Fall apart, 四分五裂。怎么说呢？因为母亲她原来是当律师，后来成了家庭主妇。她所顾虑到的呢，是 Kate 存活问题，所以最后呢，决定她要在法庭上跟 Anna 两个对立。再看到父亲，她的父亲呢，是 Brian。Brian 呢，他是消防队员 firefighter， 所以说他知道这种救人一命的感觉，可是同时他也感到那种无能为力的无力感。好，我们看到了这一句话，他继续说，对于 Anna 来说 ，Brian 他对他的女儿 Anna 他的看法，事实上是充满着同情的角度的。Be sympathetic 就是具有同情心的，那他能够认同或理解 Anna 的看法跟角度。而且呢，他也极尽所能的要让他的家庭可以再度的聚合起来。那我们再看到还有一位 Jesse， 他其实呢，我们知道他为了要发泄他心中的挫折感而变得非常的叛逆。当时呢，可以说他的行为已经到了创纪录的地步了。注意到 reach new height 这个片语表示创下新高，可说是前所未有。在讲 Jesse 的行为的时候，他用到 unruly 这个字。 unruly 是形容词，表示难以驾驭的，表示任性而乖张的。他做了什么事呢？原来他对火产生一种不安的着迷。看到这个字 obsession， obsession 是一种沉迷迷惑，后面加 with， 他对火的这种感觉呢，让他犯下了 arson 纵火，最后他成了一个纵火犯。他其实是为了 retaliate against his circumstances， 也就是为了要跟环境对抗， 为了要报复他自身的处境。我们看到了最后这一段，后来呢，这件事情上了法庭，结果究竟是谁赢而谁输呢？下面他提到了戏剧化的发展 Dramatic trial， 这个戏剧化的审判最后 draw to an end， 进入了尾声，而这个故事呢也达到了 climax， 所谓的高潮。当然他就卖个关子，不让大家知道到底如何。那我们看到下面了， The judge rules in favor of Anna, but in a bittersweet twist of fate. 这个法官他判了 Anna 胜诉，可是却是一个苦乐参半的命运的捉弄之下，结果让大家完全没有想到。看到 bittersweet， 带着一点甜又带着一点苦，那这指命运的捉弄，命运的变化。后面的 far from 是远离，和什么样的情况相差甚大。所以呢，各位读者不妨看看这本书，再知道结果吧。
Well, that's day two of My Sister's Keeper. As Tom told you, it's really not cool to tell anyone the ending of a book or a movie, so we're not going to let you know what exactly happens. You'll have to either rent the DVD or get the book. Read the book. It'll be fun that way.But in our last lesson, we are going to talk about the author, Jodi Picoult, and the kind of books she tends to write. She's a controversial writer, and I kind of like those types of books either. I like to think while I'm reading and make my own decisions.
Mm-hmm. It is a book that is very thought-provoking. Okay, everybody, that brings us to the end of our lesson for today. But make sure you join us again next time for another edition of English Digest. For English Digest, I'm Tom.
I'm Stephanie.
Goodbye.
Bye.